Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Welcome to Local Food Connections, where we discuss the power of locally grown food to connect us more strongly with our communities and the lands we inhabit. The Local Food Connections show is brought to you by Local Food Connect. We're broadcasting from Wurundjeri country and acknowledge that in Australia we're growing food on the unceded land of many Indigenous nations, and we pay respects to all those who managed this land for millennia before us. My name's Anne Stanley, and today I'm chatting with James McLennan, who's the CEO and co-founder of Farm My School, which is a model of growing food that transforms unused land in schools into regenerative market gardens that connect communities to the school and also educate the kids in the school. So another enterprise that's connecting communities through food. And it's a pleasure to have you on the show, James.
Thanks, Anne. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
Would you tell us a little bit about what is Farm My School, just for a minute or so?
Yeah, so look, Farm My School, I guess, was founded on almost the problems we saw in schools and in the education system in general. But then also broader than that was the issues associated with the lack of food production, not only in our regional areas, but also in our urban areas too. And I guess the key to that being the regenerative food, like food that's actually grown well and is nutrient dense and not traveling all over the globe or even all over the country, but is actually harvested close to the source and actually, you know, consumed within, you know, hours or days of actually harvest. So I guess, yeah, there's a lot of reasons why the concept was born by a few mates and I. We sort of came, put our heads together and came up with this whole concept. And we thought schools are a really powerful place and a place of a lot of potential as well, where, you know, they are in the heart of a community and you know, easily accessible for people to actually be able to source their food from. So that was the sort of the initial ideas.
And it's a brilliant idea, and we know it's a brilliant idea because lots of people are having a crack at it around the place.
Exactly.
Bundoora Secondary College. Did you know about the Bundoora Secondary College one here?
Yes. I actually had the assistant principal in a PD I ran the other day who was telling me about what they're doing there. So there's some great programs happening, and we always knew that school gardens are a really, you know, they're the heart and soul of a school. They're where the students always gravitate towards and generally connect with the school and the lands they're on. There's always huge potential for teachers to integrate school gardens into the curriculum, which is sadly not often the case. I guess the problems associated with school gardens is they're often not funded, and they're often run by a passionate teacher or a passionate parent
who leaves.
Who leaves, and then they're left to, you know, pick up the pieces or not at all. And that's just, you know, a few worm farms in the corner that have fallen apart and some garden beds that have been
got rosemary in them.
Exactly. It's such a common narrative of schools. And I think also because of that, school leadership or even a lot of teachers just go, oh, you know, school gardens, yeah, they're great, but they don't really, you know, do much. Whereas looking at holistically, and I guess specifically in Victoria, there's a key strand through the curriculum of sustainability. So we can actually link every single subject, every single year level to school gardens and, you know, environmental education in general. So it's really tangible, hands-on learning opportunities for students, and it just makes sense.
It makes total sense, especially I noticed on your website your governance model's very clever. It's got a lot of high profile and highly qualified people on the board, etc. And I like how you've talked about how it's already in the state government's curriculum and the national curriculum.
Yes,
So, there's so much I'd love to talk to you about, but I wanted to go back to the very first point you made. What sort of problems do you see in schools? And I presume you mean for students and teachers, especially students, that you thought this would help to solve?
Yeah, look, and I guess also broader than students and teachers, the environment in general too. Like it's, I mean, schools are a place of learning. They're not just, they shouldn't be just a place of learning for students. They should be a place of learning for the broader community as well. So I guess, look, I can reel off a number of problems. One a big issue for me is the amount of infrastructure in a school that is used between 9 and 3 for 5 days a week and only 40 weeks of the year. And that to me is ludicrous in the sense that we have such an amazing opportunity to be able to use the kitchens in schools, the tech studies sort of areas in schools, the science labs, the school grounds in general. And it could be used as the heart of that community to educate, inspire, engage, and nourish, other people other than students, so adults and adult learning, and even that sort of intergenerational part comes into it. If we can actually, let's say we do a cooking workshop like what we're doing with our Nourish Workshop series, we have, really high profile chefs and celebrity chefs and to come in and run cooking workshops from Bellarine Secondary College, which is our pilot site. And bring in community members where we've literally had 8-year-olds and 82-year-olds in the same room at the same time cooking with each other and sharing stories, which is just absolutely beautiful. So that's one opportunity. The other infrastructure, like often, I mean, you've got huge roof capacity in roofs to potentially capture a lot of water and harvest and store. If there are tanks in schools, they're often not connected to anything. They're often just sort of standalone, and the school leadership team don't even know where they go or what they're there for. Or so to be able to use that water is again ticks a box for us. The other things like available spaces in schools, often there's one or two ovals, one might be used, one might be partly used, but even sort of along the side of classrooms or perimeters of the school grounds aren't utilized. When we have an issue in our often in our sort of metropolitan or areas around metro areas that are being converted into housing estates and beautiful arable soils being covered with concrete slabs, and yeah, we just like we need to be rethinking how food is produced, and schools provide that. Again, they're in the middle of a community, and that transportation doesn't have to be large distances and thousands of kilometers. So that's from a broader perspective, I guess. Also, like as I've mentioned, the opportunity within schools to engage and offer hands-on learning for students. It's not just about the learnings, it's also about well-being. And we are in an age of nature deficit disorder where we are disconnecting with our natural surrounds. So getting students and teachers out of the classroom, outside into nature, whether it's a wet, cold, rainy day, or whether it's a blowing a gale, I think there's always learning opportunities to have outside. So and effectively they come in happier, they come in more rounded, more calm, more peaceful. So it just makes sense to get students outdoors.
Because they've engaged in all their senses, haven't they? They're not just asked to just use their mind or their brain.
Absolutely. Yeah. In fact, one of the most sort of powerful pieces I often do with students is literally get them to walk outside in silence, and we just observe. Use your senses, smell, sight, hear, and then we talk about it. And then literally at the end, we talk, how are you feeling? And literally the words that come up are always happy, calm, peaceful, and others as well. Like it's such a simple activity, it's such a really impactful activity.
You've just covered it all, James. I've got nothing else to ask you. You've just nailed it. This is what we talk about aspects of that on every one of our shows. We talk about therapeutic horticulture. You got that covered. Talk about the younger generation inheriting the problems of environment, unused land, wasted land in urban settings. It's got it all. It's just brilliant. So, can I ask you what's your background? Are you a horticultural background person, or are you a teacher? Or what got you interested in this?
Yeah, good question. So I was brought up on a regenerative beef and lamb farm in southwestern Victoria. And we not only produced the meat, but we also, my parents were avid gardeners and had beautiful veggie gardens and an orchard as well, very established orchards. So we ate a lot of our own produce growing up, which we were very, lucky to have that. I guess moving to university, where I went to La Trobe Uni in Bendigo, studied outdoor environmental education, which was a great course, amazing course, and instantly found my sort of people and my calling. And that I did that because of that, wanting to reconnect people back to nature and the environment and for the environment. But I did see instantly like this shift of how other people lived, supermarket shopping and where consumers were typically buying their food from, which was a stark difference to my upbringing. So yeah, taught for a number of years in not only secondary schools, a bit of primary, but then also did some lecturing at La Trobe too. But always wanted to shift back to more that food systems approach and sustainability. So yeah, in 2015 I left teaching to start my own business in food systems education and sustainability as well. So working with schools to assist them integrate those sort of subjects into the curriculum. And then, more and more saw the need for a program like Farm My School and how it could, it just made sense. It's not rocket science. There's some really simple approaches and techniques and programs, but it's, whoever we talk to, their face always lights up of, oh, wow, it does make sense. It's just all there. So at very, very available to us. So it is exciting to be working on it.
Right, it's not rocket science, but it's got a lot of moving parts, hasn't it? So,
Absolutely. Yeah.
what have you put in place to make sure this doesn't become a project that's born and then dies too soon?
Great question. Look, I guess in the initial stages we did a lot of research into what was happening and what programs that are off being offered and how they're set up. And I guess the key thing for us was we don't want to create another program or concept that relies on funding. It needs to be commercially viable. It needs to be able to support itself after, the first sort of few years of operation. So, yeah, I guess in that is that key of really connecting community groups and organizations that exist in that area to the program, is the first sort of point of call. And actually, whether it's us receiving funding or them contributing or, whether it's raw materials or whatever, but them having a part of it so they feel that ownership too. I think the whole idea is that, a commercial market garden doesn't have to be big. So we did some sort of forecasts and we thought, right, 1 acre can actually be a profitable farm in terms of supporting farmers. So we've our farm at Bellarine Secondary College is now 1.5 acres. And to give you an idea of what that grows or how we're growing, it's effectively 3.2 lineal kilometers of garden beds in that 1.5 acres. So that's great. We're currently employing a full-time farmer, a casual farmhand, and 3 school-based trainees. So we're actually, that's part of our farmer incubator program where we're training up future farmers. So the produce harvested basically is sold to the community in veggie boxes, and that feeds obviously into paying their salaries. It's also sold to food tech, so they can learn about seasonal organically grown produce. And it's also sold to the canteen. Both of them are sold at wholesale prices. They would have to be buying food in anyway. So it actually, if we can sell it to them at wholesale prices, it's better than what they're getting it from Coles and Woolies or wherever. And I guess that for us is actually getting it straight into the students, which is where we want it. The veggie boxes we can sell at recommended retail price to the broader community. We can sell at a discounted price for the school community. So it's actually sort of, assisting the school community too. But all of that is basically the income that supports our farm team. Then off of that, we have a number of other sort of ancillary incomes. We have our corporate experiences program, where we have corporate groups come out to engage in the farm for a half a day or a full day. They can learn, they can, get their hands in the soil. We do like a embodied sort of acknowledgement of country, where we walk through this remnant piece of bushland that adjoins the farm. And we, usually finish the day with like either a cooking workshop that they can actually harvest the produce and cook. Or maybe it's a team building exercise, or it could even be how they could implement sustainability at their workplace, moving forward. So it's a number of options, and we sort of build it to what they're after. We also have our, as I mentioned before, our Nourish workshop series. So, where we bring in professionals to teach basically communities, or people, anyone who wants to buy a ticket, in how to cook, how to garden, how to ferment, whatever it is. So that's also obviously ticketed. So it's that feeds into what we do too. And then finally, we have our education program, where other schools, pay for an experience, or they come out for an excursion and come to the farm to learn about what we're doing. And we've got a number of topics that the schools can access through that as well. So I guess all of those things feed into our operational costs. And then one more thing that sort of feeds on from our corporate experiences is corporate partnerships, where we can actually, partner with corporate groups who want to actually be seen doing good in the community, and sort of partnering with us. And obviously, we're pretty particular at who we would, accept with that. We won't go out to a big mining company, so to speak, and sort of go, yeah, great, they're giving us money. They need to be aligned with our values, and have some alignment to our goals and our mission.
At least a little bit, at least
Yeah, well,
something.
yeah,
But
probably a lot of it.
yeah,
But
well, a lot of
we're
the, I mean,
pretty.
yeah, a lot of them will be engaging cynically, but who, it is a fine line you got to walk there with that one, isn't it? Just because
Yeah,
got
absolutely.
so much, they've got so much money to,
Yeah. And
yeah,
then look, there is great organizations out there with a lot of money too, who are, nudge ethical things. And that's our target group. So yeah.
That's great. That's really great. So this is the Local Food Connection show on 3CR 855 kilohertz on your AM radio dial and 3CR on digital radio. You can also visit the 3CR website and listen to the live streaming of the show, and you can access all of our podcasts there too. We've got over 100 podcasts of great guests talking the kind of sense that James is talking to you right now. Now, what else can I ask you? Talk about regeneration a little bit. Could you tell us a little bit about the ways in which your family's farm was regenerative and in what ways that applies to your school farm?
So look, I guess defining regeneration or regenerative agriculture or farming is a really sort of, it's a buzzword, and it's used a lot. And a lot of people sort of just sit there and nod, and they don't actually get it, which is perfectly fine. For me, I like to define regenerative farming as working with nature and using natural systems, simple as that. We're not working against it, we're sort of working with it, and trying to improve the environment above and below the ground, effectively. So I guess, like, growing up in sort of far southwestern Victoria, we were probably the alternative family who were planting trees when others were bulldozing them. This is really fertile country. Why would you grow trees? Like, it just doesn't make sense. Yet we were out on weekends sort of planting trees with mom and dad. I think also that love and passion for soil science came from my dad, who just really, was before his times, I guess, and still he's still farming at age 76 today, and passionate about soil health and pastures and endemic species as well. So, but yeah, the love for the environment, when we weren't on the farm, was bushwalking and canoeing, and just really that understanding of natural systems. So that was sort of what I was brought up with. I guess today, look, we're, as I mentioned, we've got a parcel of land called the Basin next to Bellarine Secondary College, which makes up, a small part, being like around 2% of remnant bushland, excuse me, remnant bushland left on the Bellarine. So we're very lucky to have that there. And there's beautiful grass trees, or xantharias, that are older than European inhabitants of this country. So, for us, I guess that's That is a beautiful habitat, and this so rich in biodiversity. Whenever we have visitors, we take them in there and we actually talk about, like, we do a bit like that activity I mentioned before, that mindfulness activity is walking in silence. But we get into this parcel, and it's a big sort of depression in the ground, and talk about, well, regenerative farming is actually not this new, hipster buzzword. It's actually thousands of years old. This
Actually,
is,
it's good farming.
it's good farming, and it's actually traditional custodians techniques. Like, they were constantly working with nature. They were constantly, caring for country so beautifully and eloquently. And we can learn so much from that. So I guess looking at to traditional cultures to actually, farm as well is key for us. Today, some of the techniques we're using, as you've already mentioned, companion planting. We're doing crop rotations. We're doing like growing manure, green manure crops, and then cutting, solarizing, broad forking. So yeah, constantly working that soil and really building good microbial activity in the soil. Soil testing to ensure that we're on the right track. Yeah, it is that sort of constant monitoring and stopping and assessing and continuing. So it's not just to go out and plant all broccoli for the season and that's it. It's at the moment in the sort of depths of winter, we've probably got around sort of anywhere from 25 to 35 different varieties of veg and fruit in that 1.5 acres as we speak. So yeah.
What's broad forking?
Broad forking. So typically our beds are around 80 centimeters wide. So we have a fork that's like they're usually sort of 5, 6, or 7 tined, but they're the widths of the bed. So you actually, the actual, the tine is around 30 centimeters long, which goes deep into the soil. You actually dig it into the ground, bring it back. So you're aerating the soil, but you're also bringing up the indigenous soil as well into what you've been working on. And that's sort of allowing the microbial activity and the to sort of mix through and really come to life effectively. And that's probably a good point, in that how we actually started or transformed this disused soccer pitch that was covered with kikuyu and galenia and rabbit warrens. We knew we had to do some, dramatic changes to the soil. It was pretty terrible sandy soil with a very a substrate of clay pretty close to the surface. So we actually engaged the local community, but we promoted this event called the Build a Farm in a Day, which was literally a 24-hour event. We worked from 9 a.m. through to 9 a.m. the next morning.
Brilliant.
We didn't know how it was going to work, but we thought, right, if we can run workshops back to back, we can get the people who have paid to do the work for us. We had over 600 paid guests come to that event.
My goodness.
So that was 2.5, nearly 3 years ago. And we're about to run that event again for our second farm, which is Colac Secondary College, in November this year. So yeah, we're very excited to be doing it again. And I think we'll get over sort of 1500 people, I think, to this event. So yeah.
I just love these creative, clever solutions. It seems, there's a lot of good thinking behind all this.
Yeah, absolutely. For us, I think more so than getting the work done, and it wasn't a great deal of money that we got from it, from the ticket sales, but we engaged these people. Like, they didn't le they finished their workshops. They didn't leave. They stayed for hours.
They
Like,
were
when we had,
invested in it.
exactly, we had at one point in the afternoon, on the Saturday afternoon, I think over 450 people. And then the next morning we had the sort of, the big hurrah of look what we've produced. And in that 24 hours, we built 2.2 lineal kilometers of garden beds. And as I mentioned before, we're now 3.2. So we did a bit more after that. But like, it just shows the power of community, the power of collaboration, and what is actually possible. When people are invested in an idea of it was literally a concept before the event, and after the event, it's like, actually, well, here's what we've done. This is a team effort. So yeah, it's a pretty powerful movement. And to be a part of it and see it, it's, we had, some pretty like 13 to 14-year-olds who were just like, I have never experienced anything like that feeling of community. And even adults too. We had people from, far like northern, like Wangaratta, from Mount Gambier, from Gippsland. Like people had travelled all over to get to this event, and it really sort of showed like that sort of buy-in. So yeah, looking forward to doing it again.
So you're regenerating community and you're regenerating soil. So that's another,
Yeah.
that's a no-brainer sort of connection again, isn't it?
Absolutely. And look, obviously the benefits of having healthy soil, it goes directly into the produce we're growing, and that's going directly into these people. And we're doing a study actually currently with the Food and Mood Centre of Deakin University that is looking at how the soil health impacts the gut health, and then that impacts the mental health and well-being of the people who are eating it and engaging with the farm. And it's profound. Like, we're not talking years or months, we're talking weeks this actually occurs. So
Yeah,
it's
the gut biome can get changed very quickly, can't it?
absolutely.
Apparently. Yeah.
So we've done a great study, initial study sort of at Bellarine Secondary College, and we hope to be doing, more extensive studies with Food and Mood Centre, and Professor Felice Jacka is the professor leading that. So yeah, it's exciting.
Really great. So you're really not working in isolation at all. You're working with everybody else that's trying to come at this from all different angles.
Yeah, and I think that's the beauty of our project too, is it's not just health. It's not just, climate mitigation. It's all these. It's education, it's well-being, it is, food security. And I think that's the sort of important point to make too, is that there's a lot of emphasis and a lot of funding going into food relief. And that's, food relief is profound and has a great impact, but actually, long term, it is a band-aid solution. We need to actually move forward from food relief, and we need to be able to, we think we're basically teaching people how to fish rather than giving them the fish. So, yeah, I think that education piece is really key.
And I think any pleasure or insight or interest generated in any of these kids that are involved in this is going to last for generations in some form.
Absolutely. Yeah, look, and we've seen that with the, students from Bellarine, the students who attend just for day experiences from other schools, and especially with our trainees. We've got three school-based trainees who are completing their VCE while doing a Cert 3 in horticulture, and doing 2 days a week with us. These two of these three were going to drop out of school. They were, they're not sort of your typical students who want a finished VCE, but they've stuck in there. One of them's finished and one of them's completing VCE this year. But more so, they've got now a career path that they're actually really invested in and happy with and passionate about. They're now running, farm tours for us when we have events, and talking about what is regenerative farming, and they speak as passionately as I do, and they've got knowledge around sort of the food systems and the importance of the local the basin and the biodiversity of that and how that impacts the farm. So it really is like tangible learning to the nth degree. It's absolutely brilliant. So yeah, and to think we've done all this in just shy of 3 years as well.
Amazing.
We've now got the funding for school number two, and yeah, look out. I think we'll be sort
Look
of
out.
progressing forward pretty quickly. So that's the
Yeah.
plan anyway.
All right, look out, everyone. That's totally inspiring, James. Totally inspiring. Fantastic. Thank you so much
Thank
for
you.
coming on the show.
Not a problem. Thank you for having me. And yeah, do look out for us either on social media or jump on our website. But yeah, we do often have open days and different events. So if you're in Victoria, yeah, reach out and come and check us out.
Yep, so it's farmmyschool.com.
.com, yep, is the website. And then our socials are at farm.my.school.
Cool. Okay, thank you so much. So that's what you need to do if you want to find out more about the work down there at Farm My School down at Bellarine. As always, go to localfoodconnect.org.au to find events related to all this kind of stuff that you can attend in the coming weeks. Remember, if you want to support independent media, please subscribe to 3CR. Until next week, love the land you're on, share your surplus, and take care of each other. Stay tuned now to 3CR for more radical radio with Latin American update. Bye for now.
You are what you eat, and you are what you eat. what you eat, eats. And you're even what you eat, eats.
Yarra Bicycle Users Group Radio, 10 a.m. every Monday morning on Community Radio 3CR. Also live streaming on the web and weekly podcasts at 3cr.org.au. So listen in for the very latest bicycle stories, news and views from Melbourne and around the cycling universe. Listen in.
CR Community Radio, 855 AM.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.